It's December 1st, and you're listening to the 10th episode of the second season of Not Half Bad, the podcast covering St. John's and Rutgers basketball and their attempt to be relevant. I'm Norman of Rumble in the Garden. You can find me, by the way, at RumbleSBN or eCoastBias.
And I'm Dave of OnTheBanks.com, the Rutgers blog, and you can find me at Dave_White.
Or apparently in a bar, because Dave has been very down about his Rutgers, well, I guess the whole program, right? Isn't there something that happened in the football? Didn't they lose
the football, yeah. There's whatever.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about the loss to UConn.
UConn by double digits.
By double digits. How many wins does UConn have?
Well, now?
Yeah.
Two. Now they have two.
Nicely done. Losing to a dumpster fire. Excellent. Yeah. And the basketball team hasn't been great either. No. But
let's talk St. John's first, because I got to warm up for Rutgers basketball talk.
I understand. I think the Rutgers basketball talk it's rough. Yeah, St. John's is, so the St. John's thing, they've had a very interesting week. The Johnnies played three games this week. They played Longwood. Longwood.
I forgot to laugh at that last week. I'm so disappointed in myself.
They played Longwood in a ramp up to the Barclays Center Classic. That was this weekend. It was a stiff contest. Longwood really, really started stroking it for a couple of sequences there. We can't stop with the Longwood jokes.
Yeah, no,
And then they played Penn State, which is really not funny at all, and Georgia Tech in the Barclays Center Classic,
and neither game was a classic,
or as my wife puts it, if a place is open for 2 years, being the Barclays Center, how can it be a classic? Good question.
That is an excellent question.
It is an excellent question. I don't have an answer. So what you had going into this classic was four teams that are, at least according to the KenPom rankings and according to basic logic, four teams that are a little bit on the outside looking in. None of them are elite. None of them are, have huge aspirations. But all of them hope that this is that turnaround year where their program starts becoming something stronger, something sustainable. Ole Miss is probably the best team coming in, but St. John's should have been a close second given the talent that they had. Meanwhile, Penn State is expected to languish near the bottom of the Big Ten this year, and Georgia Tech is developing but also expected to languish at the bottom of the ACC. St. John's had Penn State to play first to get to the title game, and they lost an overtime quote-unquote thriller, 89-82. In the consolation game, they fell behind by 15 points in the second half before putting on a press and knocking off Georgia Tech 69-58. Both games were interesting. Both games had a lot to were instructive about the Red Storm team. Steve Lavin said post-Penn State that he felt that the team made progress. In fact, he said, and I quote, "Tonight was probably a stretch of our best basketball. This was clearly the best we've played this season. When you play better basketball teams, of course, the air gets thinner at the top of the mountain, so there's a finer line or margin of error, and that's what we found out today." That was about Penn State.
I don't even know what that means.
Well, what he's saying is that, you know, when you play better teams, you can't mess up the ways that you had all season. Specifically for St. John's, getting off to really slow first half starts offensively, mm-hmm. and then turning it on in the second half, which is what they've done all season against Bucknell, against everybody, actually against except for Wagner, where they started off hot and then let Wagner back in the game in the second half.
Yeah. So let me ask you, what did they do? They won handily against Longwood.
Fairly handily. I mean, the final score looks better than the game really was. St. John's and Longwood played it pretty close in the first half. St. John's just couldn't really get anything going. You know, they Longwood provided stiff defense, especially inside. And
oh God. They're the Lancers?
Yes, they're the Lancers.
Yeah. Are they
I know. This whole podcast is NSFW.
Oh,
Anyway, St. John's had it at a four.
Oh, it's been that kind of week.
Yes. Well, St. John's had a 4-point advantage at the half. And it was just the kind of game that nobody, it seemed like nobody could put a ball in the basket. And that's not worth laughing at. nobody could put the ball in the basket. And it was just, you know, against a team that was missing their leading scorer and their one effective scorer, Tristan Carey, and has very little size, St. John's just couldn't, you know, there were just lots of jump shots, lots of just bad idea shots until they put on a little bit of pressure and managed to, you know, really, really take advantage of Longwood. It was right. A strange game, you know? It was just a game that you want to say maybe they didn't take it seriously enough, but in the back of your head you're saying, maybe this team just isn't that good.
What did they win by? What did they end up winning by?
18. Or 17. It was 65-47.
Okay. 65. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, they pulled away at the end, so.
Yes. They did pull it out.
Yeah.
I can do this all day.
Oh, you've got some stamina talking about Longwood.
I do have some stamina.
So, okay.
But in all seriousness, yes. No, I mean they it was a strange game. D'Angelo Harrison led them with 18 points, but he shot 6 for 19 from the field, and that was probably one of the best performances outside of Sir Dom Poynter, who was a very efficient, like, 4 for 4, had a couple of rebounds. It was just a bad game all around. It just seemed like a team that really struggled to get any kind of rhythm going.
Kind of like lots of alarm bells went up as a when you're analyzing the game.
Oh,
maybe.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, the alarm bell should go up for because the team didn't handle business against a very weak squad. And yes, they're trying hard, but this is a weak squad without their leading scorer. What the heck, you know?
Yeah, they're kind of impotent.
They trying too hard there. Okay,
yeah,
no, you're right.
Well done.
So yeah, that was a disappointing game. It was a little let down, you know. It was a flaccid performance.
But all right, we really need to move on to the Penn State game.
I'll leave with one quote, though, from Lavin. He said, this game felt like two football teams kicking field goals in the snow.
Oh, geez.
That's a good one.
He really works on his metaphors and similes, huh?
He's a very erudite fellow.
Big fan of his figurative language.
Yes.
Okay, so now after watching the Longwood game, are you as a fan / blogger / guy worried about this Penn State game going in?
Sure, okay. Penn State, the thing that Penn State did that was probably most worrisome is that they could shoot. You know, that they're this squad that has, you know, shooters up and down the roster, and then a highly underrated guard in Tim Frazier who, he's really emerging on the national scene, and if Penn State does something, if they make it somewhere, even if they make a strong NIT run, I think people will be talking about Tim Frazier and maybe, you know, does he have pro potential? He's got a very strangely good game, you know? He's a little sneaky. He's very crafty. He's very intelligent. And St. John's has just not played smart basketball. I wouldn't go as far as there's a Penn Live, I guess, is the website. I forget what newspaper that covers now. But one of their writers, David Jones, wrote one of the more insulting things I've heard about the Johnnies. He called them a largely brainless athletic outfit. You know, it's just very coded language. That wasn't cool at all, man. That was really gross. However, it's kind of true. You know, he did whip out the Lavin just rolls the balls out and lets them play. And I think people don't realize that it does take a lot of work to create an offensive attack. And the Johnnies are obviously trying to do some things, but they're doing some things that they're not comfortable with. And, you know, one worry is going into that Penn State game that there are just so many flaws, especially offensively, that they wouldn't be able to hang with Penn State. Coupled with the fact that they don't defend the three very well going into that game, you know, there are a lot of places to worry. So, Of course, St. John shoots the living crap out of the ball. They shoot like 50% from outside the arc. they're
11 for 20. Yeah. 50-something percent. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were almost explosive. I didn't see it because it was only broadcast on Barclays Center's website for $9.95.
Are you serious?
I am serious.
What a joke.
Yeah. The other games were on NBC Sports, but I think NBC Sports chose to broadcast the Battle for Atlantis and didn't want to use the server space for an online feed for the second game of the Barclays Classic. Such is life. Yeah,
but it's St. John's Penn State. It's too, like... Well, yeah, I know. St. John's is a name program, and Penn State is Penn State, so...
And I think if anything, if you wanted to show a basketball game with any sort of atmosphere, showing a game in Brooklyn between Ole Miss and Georgia Tech is like the opposite of the atmosphere. Yeah. Those people aren't going to be there. That's just not a thing, you know?
Yeah.
If you showed that game in Atlanta, I mean, or if that game was played in Atlanta, yeah, maybe there'd be fans. But not in New York. That's not a big thing. So it sounded like the crowd was certainly better for St. John's and Penn State. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a weird game. You know, it was St. John's fell behind by a bunch. They got behind by 15 once again. They couldn't stop Penn State's DJ Newbill. But the fact that Penn State plays their players, you know, pretty much the whole game, Newbill and Frazier in particular. They just kind of lost the energy. And I'm wondering, you know, it seems like they put on that St. John's put on a bit of the press there too. And a few mistakes, a little bit of press, St. John's kept rebounding, and Phil Green's sudden energetic performance, the Johnnies had a chance to win at the end.
Yeah, it came down to last possession in regulation.
Uh-huh. So coming out of the stretch, St. John's managed to just brawl their way back, getting into the lane, getting some layups, hitting some jumpers. Phil Green was effective. And late on, you know, Jakar Sampson started feeling it a little bit. D'Angelo Harrison hit a three and drew a foul and got them tied. So, you know, this is with about a minute left, right?
Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay, I see. Yep.
You've got Jakar Sampson manages to also pick up a foul with a chance to put the team ahead by two. I think it was like 73-72. And he misses one of two. You know, if you're up 75-72, it's a different kind of game with 10 seconds left versus being up two.
Yeah, you have to play differently.
And so Tim Frazier comes flying down, and Jakar Sampson fouls him on a three-point shot.
It's amazing.
I mean, it was weird. It was just sort of like, it was seriously 4 seconds later. It was just like, what? I mean...
Yeah, it was 6 seconds left.
6 seconds left. 6 seconds left. The thing you do, put your hands up, keep running back, let him make that shot. It works better, of course, if your team is up three and he's only making that shot for the tie, but whatever. So, you know, Tim Frazier takes his free throws and he's an effective free throw shooter, hits his three, and Penn State's up 1 point with 6 seconds left. So D'Angelo Harrison comes flying down and draws a foul with 2 seconds left. For the win, right? 1 point down?
Got to make your free throws.
D'Angelo Harrison, 80%+ free throw shooter, misses the first of two.
Jeez.
And it's this thing where, like, you know they've expended so much energy to get to this point.
Right.
And then this happens. And you know, I understand, and they're kids, and it's hard to... I honestly feel like... because it happens at the end, D'Angelo Harrison will be the one who catches a little bit more shade for his missed free throw. But I think Jakar's was the one where I was like, seriously?
Yeah.
There's 10 seconds left. This is clutch time. If you're going to be any quote-unquote kind of clutch player, that's the shot you've got to make. You've got to put it up three. You've got to make them take the shot for the tie. And that way you can play a different kind of defense. But whatever. So they go into overtime. And St. John's commits their one turnover of the entire second half in overtime. On a... I don't know what happened, but it seemed like Obekpa was maybe, you know, out by the wing and just made a pass where he didn't look to where he was passing the ball to. And that turnover led to a DJ Newbill shot that pretty much put Penn State on the path to victory.
Yeah, it looks like it kind of went back and forth. I mean, Phil Green did hit a three-pointer to pull within one at one point, but...
Yeah, but, I mean, these are all those shots where... You know, St. John's needed to maintain their advantage. You know that you've got better free throw shooters on the other side and shot creators in Tim Frazier and DJ Newbill. And you have pulled victory from the jaws of defeat, there are only so many times you can do that. You know, that's just not a thing, you know?
You have to take advantage of your opportunity the first time it comes around.
Oh, and the other thing, Max Hooper, coming out of a timeout, St. John's is down 1 point. They need to foul, but Max Hooper he commits a hard foul on Tim Frazier. According to Theo, who was at the game, tweeted that the team looked unprepared coming out of the timeout to actually run their defense. Even the fact that Max Hooper and his honestly slow feet were on the floor for that possession, that's not cool. You know, that's D'Angelo Harrison had fouled out. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, you know, Max Hooper is not the one you want on the floor with 22 seconds left. He hadn't played much. This is really his first extended time. And apparently he just, like, clotheslined the guy. Accidentally, really. Like, I think he was just trying to defend and just got clumsy and hit him in the head.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous.
So that gives Penn State the ball and the free throws, and that's pretty much the end.
Yeah, I mean, they're 6-2, but this is the game they're going to be hanging their hat on, Penn State.
That said, you know, there's a whole... We've often talked about the concept of the Lavin loss, and one can say that maybe this is the Lavin loss. You know, the loss to a team that maybe you shouldn't have lost to, and it's a real wake-up call for the team and to figure out what it is that they want to do and for the players to execute better.
There's still so many alarm bells in the game before and then the game we're going to talk about after.
Yeah.
So.
And there are, I mean, I'll also talk about how, I mean, the upcoming games are a whole set of, like, minefields, which is actually kind of exciting.
Yeah.
To see, but we'll talk about that later. So, mm-hmm. Okay, so in the second game against Georgia Tech, early in the afternoon, St. John's goes with a slightly different starting five, inserting Max Hooper for Orlando Sanchez, who'd committed a couple of turnovers and didn't play a lot, it seems, down the stretch against Penn State.
Excuse me.
And it was interesting because St. John's got off to one of the worst starts I've seen in a long time. They had a 7-minute drought in the first half. They were stuck on 4 points for I don't even know how long, until, like, you know, 15 minutes in the game or something like that. I mean, it was something along those lines. I don't even remember. It was just like, it was terrible.
Yeah.
They looked disjointed. They looked like they didn't have a clue. And I know people will say that it's the offense, but I think it's also that they haven't played against a team with that kind of size yet. Because Georgia Tech comes in with, you know, a near 7-footer, a 6-foot-8 athlete who can play, and then a bunch of other size on the wings. And I think they played it effectively. They also played well man-to-man. And St. John's just, you know, they lost their verve. They weren't – there was one timeout that St. John's took before they turned things around a little bit, where after missing yet another shot – in transition, Robert Carter, the Georgia Tech 6'8" forward, you know, gets the ball on the wing, just wide open. I mean, there's nobody within like 15 feet of him, and then he just starts, you know, kind of slowly dribbling into the paint, like looking for contact or something. It was just such a sad little moment before Obekla comes over and then fouls him, or he makes the shot or whatever. It was just like, come on, you gotta at the very least. You have to keep playing hard on defense because that's what, if there's anything that this team is good at, it's using their athleticism for defensive purposes. And, right. You know, if you're just going to mail it in on defense, it doesn't matter if you missed your shot. You have to get stops.
Right. I'm looking at the box score here, and this game almost looks like the exact opposite of the Penn State game,
mm-hmm.
where at least free throw wise, because in the Penn State game, Penn State went to the line, what, 38 times, something like that?
Yeah.
And this time, St. John's got to the line 35 times.
An important factor here is that Georgia Tech and Brian Gregory, I've always said, is a overly stubborn coach. I've been critical of his work at Dayton, where he has these good teams that just can't hang on late in the second half. You know, I always used to talk about the concept of the Dayton loss, where, you know, they're up on somebody, you know, pretty significant. They're up on Xavier. They're up on, I don't know, whatever, whoever was in their conference at the time. You know, they're playing well and they're up like 10 points and, you know, it's the second half. There's 10 minutes left. I was like, nope, time for the Dayton loss. And you just see a team that can't make shots and then they allow runouts because they're trying to play everything fast.
Right.
And then they, you know, inexplicably give up like a 10-2 run and then another run. And then all of a sudden they're down like 5 or 6 points. And you're just like, you just wish that, you know, guys like Brian Gregory would throw in a few other wrinkles, play a zone, you know, mm-hmm. slow things down a little, show some control, find a guy who can shoot, you know, things like that. And
right.
I think that I hope for the best for him because he seems like a very good guy. And an interesting coach and a Tom Izzo disciple. I'd love to see him succeed. I'd love to see Georgia Tech be good. But, you know, losses like this, you know, they were so far up on St. John's, and then they started letting them in when D'Angelo Harrison just decided, you know, F it, I'm taking this thing over.
Right.
And, you know, he started drawing – he drew a couple of just nutter fouls where I think it was like Chris Bolden and on two consecutive possessions – just bumped him as Harrison was dribbling. And it's like, you got to play smarter defense. And slowly, St. John started working their way back, and Georgia Tech continued to play man for much of the second half, even though they weren't scoring, and St. John's is obviously susceptible to zone defenses. So, you know, but that's on them.
Yeah. But the question is, why, if this press is working, and I asked you this off the air,
mm-hmm.
if this press works for St. John's and drags them back into the game and, you know, causes the turnovers and plays the way they want to play and gives them an advantage, why aren't they using it constantly?
Who knows? Maybe they don't want to expend too much energy, except they're 10 deep, you know. And
they're 10 deep, and they're all juniors and seniors. Mm-hmm.
And
you know?
Lavin's talked incessantly about how he loves the depth of his team and how he can use different combinations. And, you know, to be fair, I think pressing all the time can be injurious to a team.
Well, yeah. I mean, you got to take it off once in a while, but, I mean, it's your advantage, and it doesn't seem like you use it enough.
Early, yeah. I mean, yeah. They come out early and they play, you know, just their regular zones and try to slow teams down. And that doesn't work. I mean, I was saying the thing that I said to you off air was that it reminded me of how Jim Fossil, you know, 10, 12 years ago, you know, would say maybe this was like one of the Kerry Collins years where,
yeah.
you know, people are asking him about why is his offense so vanilla. And he has some long diatribe about how basically the team isn't getting the basic offensive concepts. But everybody's thinking, but those offensive concepts aren't working. It's hard to get a team to buy in when they're not, when there's no advantage. Maybe throw in some wrinkles, get the players excited, and also get them moving in the right direction. Get them doing some things that actually, you know, feel good and work, you know, and then you know, use those basic offensive concepts later when you have an advantage or you have the other team off guard. You know, don't just throw out vanilla, you know, don't just start, you know, punching to the gut when everybody expects punch to the gut, you know?
Yeah. 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 It seems like the sort of thing where if you come out vanilla, meanwhile, if you come out and press, first of all, it energizes the team. You can get out to a big lead and then you take it off. You know, if you're up 10 or whatever, especially in a game like this, you take it off and then you play your zone or your man and you know,
mm-hmm.
slow them down that way. Instead, he's using it as the opposite, and they're getting down, and then they need the press to get back in the game, and that's when you expend so much energy.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to be a second-half team, to have second-half adjustments, that's true, and you don't necessarily want to shoot your wad early. I mean, it's interesting that after the game, that it took a halftime talking to Jakar Sampson to get him more aggressive. And I don't mm-hmm. know why it takes them a while to warm up to a game. These games all count. You've got to get in there. You've got to find a way to, I don't know, you know, I don't know what the answer is here
right.
because you have a team that, you know, offensively, especially they just look like they struggle. They don't really have very good ideas yet.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I do think though that there's a lot of, there's obviously enough talent on this team to, you know, for them to improve a lot. And I think Lavin's teams, you know, the 2011 team that he had with DJ Kennedy and Dwight Hardy and crew, you know, that team didn't look very good early on either. They lost to St. Bonaventure. It took them a trip to the Great Alaska Shootout to really start to look sort of okay. And even after that, they lost to Fordham. And then, you know, it was a few weeks later that they started really getting the concepts. And maybe there's part of that, too. You hate to see that with a team that Lavin's had for 3 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, this has kind of been a thing. And I think at UCLA, he had a number of teams that just had, you know, questionable starts only to turn it on late. And mm-hmm. one can only hope that that's what's going to be going on here. But mm-hmm. one also would hope that that a coach can more easily and more quickly identify what's going on and find ways of getting his team to start off hot and to get some confidence in what they're doing. You know, whether it's, right. you know, starting off in the high post with Orlando Sanchez or finding or making plays for D'Angelo Harrison to start the team off right. I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know either.
So that's St. John's, and they've got well, we'll talk about their minefields. Let's talk about the joys of being a Rutgers fan.
And if you're a St. John's fan, you can turn the podcast off right now.
There'll be crying. I promise you, there will be some weeping.
It's just, oh God, what a week. It started out last Monday because if you remember, Rutgers lost to Drexel, who was damn impressive this week, by the way.
Yeah. Did they win the second game of the NIT tip-off?
In triple overtime, they won.
Oh, that's right. Sexy.
Yeah. Yeah. They lost by Arizona by four.
And who Arizona who beat Duke.
Who beat Duke. And who beat Duke a little more handily than Drexel got beat.
Mm-hmm.
So hats off to Drexel. They're better than I gave them credit for, I think, on the podcast last week.
Mm-hmm.
So Rutgers had to host two consolation games at the RAC, one against Stillman College, who's a Division II school, a private college with a public mission, Tuscaloosa, Alabama,
ooh,
home of Stillman College.
And the University of Alabama, I guess they're just kind of in the shadows.
That would explain why Alabama, who's also in the preseason NIT, played them.
Okay.
Yeah. So Rutgers played Stillman College. They got junior Itu back, but they were short another one of their players, Craig Brown, who had hurt himself against, I think it was Drexel, because he was out against William Mary,
mm-hmm.
and he was going to be out the next 2 days.
Yeah, he's missed three games.
He's missed three. And Rutgers won. They won 116-89. But it was another alarm bell game.
Well, you know, when a Division II team is hanging 89 on you, you got to stop and think, what went on here?
Yeah. Stillman College, the games weren't on TV, and I wasn't paying $10 to go. So I'm just going on what I listened to. Stillman College is the kind of team that'll shoot from anywhere at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were hot. They shot 42% from three in the first half and kind of hung around in the first half.
My gosh. They had a guy who shot 8-for-12 from the three-point line.
Yeah. What's his name?
Jeff Wary.
Wary, yeah. And it was a worrisome first half of the first probably 15 minutes until Rutgers pulled away. Because Rutgers shot 70% in the first half, including 52% from three, and still Stillman hung around for a while. Rutgers ended the half up 9. After shooting 40% in the first half, Stillman, they only shot 27%, and they only scored 38 points, and Rutgers scored 56. So you kind of thought, all right, maybe they took them a little lightly in the first half. They didn't bear down. And then they did in the second half, and really, you know, they outscored them by almost 20. But still, Stillman hung 89.
Mm-hmm.
On Rutgers, like you said. And it was kind of one of those, like, all right, you just want to get through this next game. Just get through the next game, get out with a win, be 5-3, and then you have a week off to recover and figure it out. But it all started going downhill. Rutgers was to play Fairleigh Dickinson the next game. The local 1-5 Fairleigh Dickinson.
One of the worst teams in college basketball pretty much every year.
Ranked by Ken Palm as the 349th team out of 351.
Yep.
And it started bad from the beginning. Kadeem Jack had bruised his leg, and they were holding him out. Kadeem Jack has been Rutgers' best player this whole season so far. And for whatever reason, they beat Rutgers. What else can you say?
They beat them by one point. So what happened? What happened at the end? I do see that Fairleigh Dickinson had a really hot start to the third quarter, or to the second half. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, they came out. It was a 3-point game. Rutgers was up three at the end of the half. And you're kind of hoping it was like the previous night. Now, again, Rutgers is out. Craig Brown, Kadeem Jack, and Kerwin Okoro. So they're down to 8 players. And it is clear that Miles Mack and Jerome Seegers are exhausted. So I'll say that much. Not to make excuses, because this is embarrassing. But in the second half, Fairleigh Dickinson just kind of blew up in the first 10 minutes or so of the second half. And I think at one point took like a 9-point lead.
What?
Rutgers could not hit a shot, could not make a shot. J.J. Moore is the only player keeping them in it. He scored 26. And just could not make a shot. And finally, Rutgers just, I guess, rallied to take the lead. Yeah, so it got to be a 7-point lead. It was the biggest it seems to have gotten. And then Rutgers kind of put a little pressure on them, forced some mistakes, forced some turnovers, and got to a point with 3 minutes left where Wally Judge got a dunk and they took a 1-point lead, 67-66. And you start thinking, all right, you've battled through, you've persevered. Now they'll just kind of run away with it here at the end. But Fairleigh Dickinson did not go away. And Rutgers defense, they left Sanders open with about how much time is left? 26 seconds left. I'm sorry, not Sanders. Matt McDonald, wide open on an inbound.
Mm-hmm.
And he hits a three with the score 69-61. And Fairleigh Dickinson goes up 71-69 with 26 seconds left. And here's where things get weird. Because it wasn't weird enough being down to Fairleigh Dickinson.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Jordan kind of talked about it after the fact. They ran a play that was supposed to be for Miles. He was supposed to come off a ball screen, run a pick and roll. And then he'd have the option to either pass down low or take the shot. Except it sounded like he never got the ball. J.J. Moore had the ball at the foul line. Again, I didn't see it, so I'm going on descriptions I've read. With Itu, who had played a pretty decent game, Itu had his man posted up. Rutgers had fouled out Fairleigh Dickinson's entire front line. So you think you want to crash the basket,
mm-hmm.
you know? And instead of passing to Itu or driving, Moore took a jumper from the foul line.
Oh, a J.J. Moore shot.
Yes, and missed it. Fairleigh Dickinson ran it out for a layup. Went up 4, and then Seegers hit like a three-quarter court 3 at the end to make the score a 1-point game. I think the guards are exhausted, to be honest. I mean, they've already played 8 games mm-hmm. in the span of 3 weeks. And
with no backups, yeah.
With no backups, and 4 of those games were back-to-back. So I honestly think they're exhausted. And not having Jack clearly hurt. And I think they thought they would walk over Fairleigh Dickinson. But the team, I mean, it was hard to watch because I was frustrated. I had people – I actually had to use the it's just the game line on Twitter because –
yeah, people were worried. It was
people were seriously checking in on me like they were worried about me. And I'm sane, so I wasn't going to let a basketball game – annoy me that much.
Yeah.
Although I was frustrated. But even you retweeted, you know, I have a family, a very happy family. I'm writing a book, you know, like I have things to live for that a basketball game is not going to depress me. But it was very funny that some of the beat reporters reached out to me and you and some of the other fans just to make sure. the team watching the interviews, I think Eddie Jordan was just perplexed. They didn't even post. Usually Rutgers posts the post-game press conferences on YouTube to watch.
Yeah.
They didn't even post that one. Just reading the quotes, it sounded like Eddie had no answers.
That's the worst, man. When you – the post-game presser where the coach has no answers, I've seen a few of those live, and I've seen a few of those, you know, on video, and they're just depressing. You know, that vacant look of I've got a wealth of basketball knowledge and I have no idea how to make this better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, he was stunned. He had, you know, they asked him like, do you have any message for the fans? Cause there's like 300 people in the stands.
And he was snappy about it, right? Didn't he say something like, I have no message?
I think he thought the reporter was,
trying to gotcha him, yeah.
To do a gotcha, and I don't think that was the intent.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was trying to get a we'll get better from here quote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Eddie took it the wrong way.
Yeah.
And he was snappy about it. They asked him, should your team have attacked the basket more? And all he said was, yeah. You know? So he was stunned. I did see a video of Seegers and J.J. Moore, who both seemed like they were almost in tears. Apparently Moore apologized to his team and his coach for that last shot, and he said it was a selfish shot. Went in and apologized to the team. And I don't know. I don't know.
You know, there's a part of me that wants to lambast Moore for that shot. Yeah, but I kind of understand. You know, it's part of having a struggling team and part of pressing that, you know, and I think a lot of fans don't, you know, aren't necessarily feeling that. They're like, oh, well, why don't you play better basketball? It's really hard to play better basketball when you don't know that you can honestly trust your teammates to make shots. You know that, you know, turnovers happen. You know that bad things have happened. These things are in the back of your mind and you think, you know, I can do this. You know, you're bred to be, you know, to be a high level athlete, and in a team, even within a team sport, you're bred to think, you know, I can make this work. You know, I can make this happen. You know, I see a clear shot, and you have to have that confidence to take that shot. But in the back of your mind, you know, there's the whole, do I have the confidence to make this pass? It's tough.
Yeah. And it was a weird game. I mean, it, clearly Rutgers was undermanned and tired when Jordan in the first half inserted a walk-on for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
A walk-on forward. And in that time, I think nobody scored for Rutgers, and it allowed FDU to kind of hang around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was one of those – he was trying to find answers. He was trying to keep his team, you know, healthy since they're already beat up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think everything went wrong. And there's no – I mean, he said it, and you can say it as a fan, but I'm a fan, whatever. There's no excuse for this kind of loss. But I was thinking about this yesterday. It's kind of what makes college basketball wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time that Dickinson can come in and beat a big conference team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes every game matter.
Yeah, because all you have to do is, you know, as a lower level team, is play with confidence, catch that other team on an off night, and, you know, shoot a little bit. You know, take the advantages that you have, play a smart game. You know, everybody still has to run to the same spaces and get the ball in the same hole, you know.
Right. And this is the sort of thing everybody right now is talking about, Alabama-Auburn and how unbelievable the game was,
mm-hmm.
which it was. The ending was amazing. But at the same time,
we're talking about. Yeah.
I'm sorry, the football game. At the same time, it took the number four team in the nation to beat the number one team in the nation. A Fairleigh Dickinson type football team would hardly ever hang with an Alabama and actually beat them.
Well, yeah, but you're not. Here we're not talking about Fairleigh Dickinson playing Kansas. We're talking about, you know, more of a Georgia Southern and Florida kind of thing, which still is rare, but does happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's one of those. I don't know.
I agree. I mean, but college basketball, the beauty of it is that it's so egalitarian. That last year, you know, what was it? Southern took Gonzaga to the brink in the NCAA tournament because you can do that sort of thing. You know, you have a good plan and a team that believes in what they're doing, and you're playing a team that's a little, you know, a little shaky.
Yeah. And
they could catch it. Yeah.
And I mean, what can you say? I mean, as a fan, you start thinking, oh God, is this another Fred Hill era? Because I'm sorry, this team has talent. you know?
But maybe it's time to start. Well, I think two things stand out to me, or three things. The first
one, Norman, talk to me because I'm speechless.
All right, the first thing is more of a snark. How about that Captain Greg Lewis? He's really captaining away.
It's ridiculous. He got what, 9 minutes?
Did
nothing. He hit he scored 2 points.
Woo. I mean, not, you know, the whole concept of the captain in college sports is, you know, here or there. But this is a team that needs somebody to sit everybody down and, I don't know, lead a little.
Yeah.
And I don't know where that's going to come from.
I mean, they're all these quiet leaders, it seems like.
Yeah. I think also, the talent's a little overrated. You know how I feel about Wally Judge. You know, I think ever so often there's a McDonald's All-American who later proves that maybe he wasn't an All-American. Maybe he just, you know, had a good team, a good coach, and, you know, and he's good, but he's not great.
Right. But he doesn't need to be great. You know what I mean?
But he needs to be good, and he's not even good.
Yeah. All right.
That's just my take. I feel like I watch him and I'm like, where's Wally Judge? Oh, yeah, he's still on the court, you know? And I think maybe that this Rutgers team isn't as talented as you think it is. You know, I think Miles Mack is a very good player, but he can't do it alone, and he's too small to do it alone. And then everybody else is, you know, they're sort of just a guy types, you know?
Right.
And you've got, you know, some emerging but not, you know, offensively skilled players in Kone and Itu. You've got J.J. Moore, who can score, which is good, but, you know, the other parts of his game are iffy. And you've got a scheme that seems to allow a whole lot of three-pointers.
Yeah. It's weird. They wait. If they're playing zone or man, they run this defensive play where they wait towards the ball. Everybody kind of shuffles towards the ball. Mm-hmm. And every team has found the open three-point shooter on the wing. And it's always like three possessions in a row before Rutgers figures it out.
Yeah. St. John's has a bit of that, too, where, you know, they play their zone, and I understand why you play their zone. You'd rather have a team have a shot from outside the arc, but teams seem very prepared, and the passing isn't – you've got to bother the passing or bother the spacing enough that the rhythm – that it's not like these aren't rhythmic catch-and-shoot shots from the corner from the wing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's at least – how I've seen that kind of zone played effectively. And even then, you know, teams are going to strafe the zone.
Yeah.
So it's problematic. So, yeah, I mean, those are, you know, my thoughts on Rutgers. I think that it's a long year, man. It's going to be a long year.
I think what you hope is, you know, Wednesday they play George Washington, and you think they're going to be as whole as possible.
Yeah.
You know, Okoro won't be back, but they should be 10 deep. And you hope that they can steal. I mean, you know, they can play better. You know what I mean?
But they're on the road to George Washington.
I know who's 5-1. It'll probably be 5-2 after today.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have Seton Hall on Sunday night.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I mean, you hope that being whole helps. I think they're better than they were against Fairleigh Dickinson. I think they'll be better in January than they are now.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll knock a couple people off at the rack at some point just by getting hot from three.
Yeah.
But you're right. It does feel like what bothers me is that if this is a long year, then next year will also be a long year because it's the same team. Minus J.J. Moore and Wally Judge and instead three freshmen.
Yeah.
You know, well, two freshmen and a junior college player.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. You're talking all of a sudden it goes from, hey, we've got some talent and maybe we can make some noise to, oh God, it's going to be a 5-year rebuilding program.
Yeah. It's tough. I think it's tough when you're close to a program, when you follow a program to not, you know, to not fall into the traps of what people are saying around the program. I think, you know, one wants to believe when they're saying things that make logical sense, given the inputs that you have, that it's easy to think, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah. You know, maybe this year they'll just play tough and blah, 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 you know, cause that can happen. College basketball isn't static, but then there, when the truth comes out for Rutgers, the fact that, you know, they're maybe lacking in talent, and then for St. John's, the fact that they haven't been able to shoot for years, and they give up a lot of threes, that there's a large, you know, there's a lot to climb. You know, you don't just turn from a team that can't shoot to a team that shoots well enough to take advantage of their defense in, you know, an off season. Right. That doesn't really happen.
Yeah. I don't, that's the thing. Like, you buy into the fact that, hey, this is the year Mike Rice was pointing towards. And you think, all right, maybe they'll finally come together with a cooler coach. And by cooler, I don't mean like, hey, he's a cool guy, but like calmer.
Cooler head, yeah.
Cooler head. And you know, a little more complicated offensive schemes.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like the team, Jerry Carino put it best. He says it's not that they're playing without heart, and it's not that there's chemistry problems where they're fighting in the locker room. They're all good kids. But the chemistry problem is there's a disconnect between the coach and the players, and they're not playing the way they should be. They're not – Jordan keeps saying it. They're not running the offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there's a line between having a green light offense – and having a green light offense where you're smart enough that, no, J.J. Moore, on that play, this you should not have the green light.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or, mm-hmm. no, Greg Lewis, you should not be taking that three-pointer.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And that's what they're learning. And that's what I think will make them better in January, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they're going to be good enough to, you know, have a miracle season.
Yeah.
Although
what?
I did a little research.
Oh, boy.
And Bob Wenzel's first year when he took over for Craig Littlepage back in 1988-89.
You've gone back like 15 years.
What,
20 years?
I went back more than 20 years, 20-something years, 25 years. Yeah, I went back. Craig Littlepage was terrible. He was Fred Hilbert. The fans who were there, and I was not one of them, say that he was worse than Fred Hill. Craig Littlepage now runs like the NCAA selection committee as the AD of Virginia.
Okay.
Kind of thing. But mm-hmm. he was a coach and he was horrific. And when Wenzel took over that team, the team started 6-10 and everybody kind of thought, hey, this is, you know, Craig Littlepage all over again. Although if you look at the teams they lost to when they were 6-10, it was like Syracuse and Penn and, you know, some big time teams. Mm-hmm. And then they went on a 12-3 run to close out and run the table in the tournament. Wow. So teams do get hot once every 25 years.
Hope springs eternal.
Hey, I have season tickets. I got to convince myself to go somehow. What are you going to hang your hat on? Jordan's recruiting looks pretty good. Although he's got a commitment from that Austin Burnett guy that nobody heard of.
Mm-hmm.
But he also got a commitment from a top 150 player for 2015, Leroy Butts, who's actually supposed to be. I've seen his name around a lot, and a lot of big-time teams are interested in.
Is he a forward?
He's another one of those wing, power forward, wing, could play like three positions, okay. Long, 6'8", 185.
Positional, yeah.
That, which seems to be what Jordan wants because it's all he's recruited.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And, you know, they have a scholarship for next year. I think he wants a point guard, though. It might be better for him to get a guy who can defend the rim and rebound a little bit.
I don't know. He might want a point guard, considering that his guard situation is exhausted, and they're both juniors.
Yeah. I actually think a point guard is probably the best route to go, because you're going to have 6 open scholarships the following year.
Mm-hmm.
And if
you want a leader.
Yeah, if this offense is as complicated as it sounds, you want a kid learning the offense for a year behind 2 seniors,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to learning it as a freshman where you're starting by default. All right, so this has been Not Half Bad. I'm Dave of OnTheBanks.com, the Rutgers blog. I may be sad, but I'm not depressed. And you can find me on Twitter at Dave_White.
And I'm Norman of Rumble in the Garden. I'm neither sad nor depressed. I'm curious, and I love seeing obvious problems and how they get solved. You can find me at RumbleSBN for the Rumble feed, and if you want my more wide-ranging college basketball feed, that is Ecoast Bias on Twitter.
And real quick, Norman, as a kind of postscript, because we didn't say, who does St. John's have coming up?
St. John's has Fordham coming up next Saturday, where Tom Pecora always likes to beat on St. John's whenever he can. It'll be in Madison Square Garden. Great opportunity for both teams to do whatever it is that they want to do. After that, they have Syracuse, which, you know, is a team that all St. John's fans would love to, you know, just put a whooping up on.
Right.
And then San Francisco, who beat them last year in San Francisco, but now are missing their point guard who slashed them up last year.
And we will probably be off next week unless I figure out how to do a podcast. So, because Norman will be absent. So it'll either be just me or we'll just skip a week. We'll have a bye week.
You can find us at NHB Pod on Twitter, or you can email us with questions or comments at nothalfbadpod@gmail.com.